This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
And Mr. Durham, happy Father's Day weekend to you and all the guys. It's our weekend coming up, and we plan to celebrate accordingly. There you go.
Same to you, Pack. Great to be with you on a Friday. Got a great show for you. Kind of a interesting day in the calendar impacting the program today here, too. Yep. A lot going on here. My man, who has always figured out creativity in a unique way, has sorted out. You have sorted out. This is a landmark day for you.
It is for me and Mrs. P. And I like to come up with offbeat things, as you well know, whether I'm doing a radio show or hanging out with you. Today is a very important day for the Team Packer here in the household, because today me and my beautiful bride, Amy, celebrate, and we will tonight. Today we celebrate the 10,000th day that we've known each other. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, hey, moron, how in the world do you know that? Well, I know when we met on a totally blind date. We met on a blind date on February 1st, 1994, and today is 10,000 days since that incredible night. And I told my wife, and she was stunned, and how do you come up with this stuff? I said, it's why you married me. It's not because of my good looks, it's because of my creativity. And so tonight we will celebrate our 10,000th day of knowing each other. So, Mrs. P, whether you're up this morning or not with your cup of coffee, which I've got made for you in a card.
Happy 10,000.
Happy 10K. Happy 10K day to Mrs. P today. So there you go. Yeah,
nice job. Well done.
Thank you. By the way, can I give one more shout out?
Yes,
you know
please.
How much I
want to do some shout outs this morning.
Real quick. I got a handwritten note. You know how much I love handwritten notes. This comes from my buddy, Mr. Williams, who I've never met. He lives in Seattle, Washington, Wes. And his family back in North Carolina, he's a big NC State guy, so he's really excited about the College World Series and Elliott Avent and his guys. But he sent me a note earlier this week, and today, I don't know if we can get this shot right here, but today he sent me a picture. This is his dog, Doc, who's sitting on his version of the Roger Goodell chair. And Doc is a emotional support animal, ESA. And today, Doc turns one. So I told him, I said, buddy, I said, you know how much I love dogs. I wrote him back. I said, I promise you on June the 18th, which is today, your buddy Doc is going to get a shout out up there in the Pacific Northwest in Seattle, Washington, as they sit back and chill out early, check out a little Packer in Durham. So Doc turns the big one
pretty
today.
Awesome.
Love the dogs. You know, we are pro dog on this show and cat in your particular case. With Clifford D, the 40% mountain lion. So, Doc, happy birthday, and keep up the great work as an emotional support animal. There you go. Tons of stuff.
Well, let's see. That's you said the gentleman's name again was
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams. And my cousin, Jesse, lives in Edmonds outside of Seattle, and he watches the show. So, We got the Pacific Northwest. We're doing good in the Pacific Northwest.
We are huge in dog country up at University of Washington, home of the Huskies. Yep. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful. That's a great town, too.
All right. Now, I love Seattle.
I do, too.
Love Seattle.
I do, too.
Great city. T-shirt Friday, as Pac said, always a staple of the program in the offseason. The T-shirt that I've got today, this is something I know Mark had Anna Slive Harwood on his show last year about this time. They were trying to do it virtually. I'm doing the I'm with Mike 5K, which will be run kind of this week around the country. Mike Slive, of course, was the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, passed away a handful of years ago. He is, in my mind, one of the integral pieces of what we now know as the success of college football. And he passed away from prostate cancer. And his daughter, Anna Slive Harwood, who she and I worked together at Georgia Tech years ago, she is now the executive director of the Mike Slive Foundation, which stages events throughout the calendar year in support of the fight against prostate cancer. One of their biggest fundraisers this week is the I'm with Mike 5K. And they do T-shirts, and they try and get people from all 50 states to have the I'm with Mike 5K. And anybody that loves college athletics as much as Mike's Live, we are proud to support. And a genuinely, Pac, as you know, one of the nicest guys in this business. And one of the great thinkers of this business was Mike Slive, one of the great visionaries of this business. And I think a lot of what goes on today is a result of the good hard work that Mike Slive and Jim Delaney and John Swofford and all these people. I remember our visits with John Swofford talking about being in that room with Mike Slive when they were putting together the CFP. And I think Commissioner Slive a lot when we get into days like we've had here in the last couple of weeks talking about the CFP. But nonetheless, I'm with Mike 5K to benefit Mike's Live Foundation Fight Against Prostate Cancer this weekend, and we're proud to support it.
Yeah, so, if you are or were a fan of college sports, you would have been a fan of Mike's Live, and he was a brilliant man, a gentle giant. I mean, he was one of those kind of guys that would walk in the room and he'd listen to you. And I've always found Jim Phillips, who by the way, have not met yet, and I know you have. But we talked about being able to listen. He talked about his listening tour. Greg Sankey, without question, great listener. Jim Delaney, great listener. Yeah, are they powerful guys? Yeah, are they smart? No doubt. But all of them have that trait of being able to listen. And Mike Slive, without question, whether he sat down with you for an interview or whether you bumped into him in the hallway or you're just having a conversation with him at a ball game, was a great listener, and he was a gentle giant and just incredibly smart. And we wouldn't be here we are today in college sports without Mike's Life. Oh. I'm just telling you, that's a God-given deal. Same thing with John Swofford. I mean, guys that hey, you know, they would sit back and they would listen, and you know, Gene Corrigan, the late great Gene Corrigan, was exactly the same way. He was a great conversationalist, but more importantly, he was a great listener. And before he formed any opinion, he wanted to know everything that was going on around him. And you know, the real smart people, even in business, I think are the same way. They're just great listeners, and they gather everything to say, okay, now let's move forward and try to figure out a plan. But Mike Slive was a great person, and God rest his soul. College athletics has missed him, but he's had such an influence on our business, it's not even funny. So that's a very cool T-shirt.
No question.
Me, on the other hand... I'm going with one today that has Beast of Bourbon on it.
Just telling the truth.
Not Beast of Burden.
Just telling the truth.
Not Beast of Burden.
No, Bourbon.
Beast of Bourbon.
That's right.
That's all you need to know, right? That's all you need to know.
Just telling the truth.
If you just tune in and say, why is Pac wearing a Colorado Buffalo T-shirt? Well, I know yesterday was National Mascot Day. No disrespect. Love Ralphie. Dealt with Ralphie a long time ago at the Blockbuster Bowl when Colorado and Alabama were there. But no, this is not a Colorado Buff T-shirt. I didn't steal this from Chris Ballard's drawer. No, this is Beast of Bourbon, right? Cheers,
7 everyone. O'clock.
7 p.m. O'clock. Big Ice Cube tonight. 10K day. So there you go. You're up to speed on all of our social doings from the last 24 hours. Everybody's good to go.
All right. We left this show yesterday telling you that there were important things going on in Washington and in D.C. I mean, in Chicago, rather. And I got to be honest with you. Pac mentioned yesterday, I just don't know we're going to get very much. Dude, I ought to listen to you more.
You ought to listen. Take a page from Mike Slive and listen. That would be a good idea for you. Nothing happened
because,
in D.C.
You know what? Nothing happened. Nothing.
We had another subcommittee.
And
subcommittee
in fact, can I just say this? There were a lot of elected officials yesterday that chose to take name, image, and likeness and then stump for their own agendas on things that have nothing to do with name, image, and likeness.
Stunned, aren't we?
Oh, my God. And disappointed.
I'm not disappointed at all. You know why? I totally expected zero to come out of D.C. Zero. They should have had the student-athletes there a week ago. They could have fast-forwarded the clock at least a week. And poor old Mark Emmert, who's got all his eggs in the Congress bag. Hey, you guys save us. Wes, I just don't think that's happening by July 1. I you know, we're sitting here on June 18th.
I don't either.
So, you know, hold on. It's going to be a rocky ride. But again, when you have no leadership, no vision, this is how you find yourself. You know, you're behind the eight ball and hoping that everybody else can do the heavy lifting so you can look good. And, you know, Congress did what Congress did yesterday. They just sat there and took pictures and pretended they were paying attention. And we'll get back to you. Let's have another meeting. I said this yesterday. Yeah. Let's not have another meeting. Let's go get something done. Roll up your sleeves.
Right.
Are you interested?
Yeah.
Great. Let's get something done. You're not interested? Great. Move on. But poor Mark Emmert has absolutely, positively no sense of direction here. And, you know, he's basically put his back against the wall, and he hopes that the D.C. can straighten him out. I hope it, for his sake and everybody else, I hope that works.
Dan Murphy, who's done a marvelous job covering this for ESPN.com, did pen an article that you can read online today talking about the divide on party lines. And again, a lot of it doesn't have anything to do with name, image, and likeness. The result is that more than likely, July 1, different schools are going to have different rules. Now, and I was asked this last week, I think, Mark, last weekend, the general shell is about the same for name, image, and likeness in some states. Now, I'm not a legal expert, and I'm not playing one on TV, okay? The general idea in these states is about the same. The details and the particulars and the amounts and things like that, that's where it gets interesting. Then, don't forget, and this is the part PAC would be readily able to tell you about, is you've got three states, two, I think, which have already, Florida and Tennessee have already come up with laws, correct? That go July 1. Texas, are they on the list for July 1? I don't believe so.
There's six states that are good to go for July 1. I think there's 19 states that have signed a name, image, and likeness bill, legislation.
That's it. But Florida does not have state taxes.
Right.
So therefore, any state that doesn't have any kind of form of state tax creates a different shell, if you will, in their own right of name, image, and likeness. And right now, that's all we got to go for. North Carolina, in the ACC footprint, we've got very few, Florida and Georgia. South Carolina's on the docket. I think Kentucky's on the docket, but those are different kind of start dates. Nonetheless, all that being said, here we go. Is it going to get bumpy? Yeah, it's going to get really bumpy. And we'll see where this goes. The CFP in Chicago, not a lot of smoke coming from there. Potentially today. What do you think, Pac?
They're going to meet again this morning. I didn't know if we'd get anything yesterday. I knew we were getting nothing from D.C. That didn't surprise me at all. I know they're meeting again this morning. I would be surprised if we did not get some bit of news, and it may not be humongous news, but I suspect that Bill Hancock will get in front of the microphone, or somebody will early this afternoon, and kind of give you a summarization of what's happened here in the last 24 to 36 hours. But, you know, they'll meet again this morning, and down the road we go. And my gut instinct tells me, for the most part, there have been quality conversations, and they'll say, hey, we're going to proceed forward, and next week we'll go to the next level of the process. I think 12 is going to be your number. Yeah. And again, you know, if there's some tweaks from what the working group did, I suspect there will be. But I, you know, that's what I think is going to happen. Again, I'm not in Chicago, I'm not in the room, but I think that's what you'll get. When by the time we start this afternoon's off campus, I suspect there'll be some kind of news that comes out of Chicago, what took place here the last 2 days.
When you say we're going to 12 in structure, yes, I agree with you on that. The fine tuning of this is the part that's going to get interesting. The part in Dallas will then be also when and how. When being, when do you start? Is that fall of 23 to be staged in January of 24? Or how's it going to be broadcast and who's paying for it, right? That'll be the other element that becomes a critical piece as we move forward, don't you think?
Well, that's what Craig Thompson told me this week on our interview. I know we didn't play but a couple clips from it yesterday. But I think that the big picture is the movers and shakers, that if they're good to go with 12 and the presidents all sign off on this, that by the time they can get to, you know, September, October, they can start the process of, all right, you know, what are the financials going to be? What are the details on logistics and et cetera, et cetera? Can we get this thing started 2 years from now, 3 years from now? What is the true time frame of moving forward? But they're literally at the what the working group established is truly the foundation, and now they're trying to figure out, hey, okay, should we go this direction, this direction? But I do think the number 12 is going to be the key number right now, and I think that will eventually get approved here today and next week when everybody gets together again for round three.
All right, so be on the lookout for that. One little bit of news I should share yesterday involving an ACC team. This is my kind of series now because this one is in, like, you can see it on the horizon. It's not way out there in fantasy land. Miami and Auburn agreed to play a home-and-home in 2029 and 2030. So there you go. 2029 and 2030 for the Canes and the Tigers.
I like that series. Yeah, I do too. I like that game. I think both fan bases will enjoy that one. And like I said, when we go to this expanded college football playoff, we've already seen some big-time teams decide to play home-and-home series with big-time teams, and that should have been the first telltale sign that something is going on behind the scenes where teams are going to be more likely to, number one, compete, improve their schedule, and if you lose the game, you're not out. You're not out. I mean, the four-team college football playoff, we haven't seen a team yet with two losses make it. And so, you know, when you have that hiccup, man, you better run the table the rest of the way. Even like Clemson, Georgia this year, whoever loses that game, hey, you're not out. But, man, the pressure to now hold serve the rest of the way is on. So that's why I like the number 12. The expansion of the playoff is going to allow more games like that to be played. That's good for college football. It's good for the fan. It's good for the team and the coaches that are recruiting. So, again, everything about it, I think, is a positive. I just think it's good. I like everything about it.
All right, big show for you on a Friday. John Mita Perrell will be here. Bottom of the hour. Two-a-days starts today with Boston College. We'll talk to Meter. And in case you missed our visit with Dan Radakovich yesterday announcing the addition of women's lacrosse and women's gymnastics to Clemson, we'll have that for you at 7:45. Carson Palmquist will join us, the first-team All-America pitcher from the University of Miami. Looking forward to talking with him. Mike Rooney will join us on the eve of the College World Series starting tomorrow. His thoughts on NC State and Virginia as they arrived in Omaha on Wednesday. And Alan Saunders from Pittsburgh Sports Now in the 9 o'clock hour. Second two-a-day will be on Pat Narduzzi's Pitt Panthers. All that and more on a, T-shirt Friday of Packer and Durham. When we come back, a look to the weekend in Omaha. NC State first on the docket tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock. Against the Stanford Cardinal. We will cover that in Virginia's Sunday tilt against the Tennessee Volunteers. All that and more. Packer and Durham's Friday rolls on next on ACC Network. Good morning.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. Again, happy Father's Day weekend to all the lads out there. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. And if you love baseball, man, this is your kind of weekend because, NC State and Virginia rolls into Omaha. And tomorrow, first game up. We got four this weekend. Two tomorrow, two on Sunday. But the first game up tomorrow, Wes, NC State, Elliott Avent, taking on those boys from Palo Alto. The Stanford Cardinal, who are back for the first time in a long time. It's been a while for Stanford. 2008, if I'm not mistaken. And for the Wolfpack, first time since 2013. But, boy, everybody's still buzzing about that Arkansas series. But you got to put that in the rearview mirror. But both these teams can hit it now. They can both go yard, but they're going to a big park. So it's going to be intriguing to see how the ballpark changes really the way both of them have been so efficient here in the postseason.
That's right. Don't forget tomorrow's game, 2 o'clock, is on ESPN. The Virginia game on Sunday slides over to ESPN2 at 2 o'clock. Tom Hart, Chris Burke, and Ben McDonald will have the call for you with Chris Budden working the dugouts at TD Ameritrade. NC State, as you mentioned, is there by virtue of banging Arkansas out on the Torres home run and sending the Razorbacks, the top seed, out of the event. The other thing, too, is NC State showed it can play its speeds, Pac. You know, you put a ton of runs up on the board in Ruston against Louisiana Tech. Then you turn around and you're able to play the one-run tight fits out in Fayetteville to win on Saturday and certainly on Sunday. But the Wolfpack has hit a lot of home runs, 90 of them, or almost 90 of them, 89 of them. Big ballpark, you got good pitching out in Fayetteville, though. Can you ride that? Maybe so. But, man, it's a different type environment. Remember when they first went downtown with this event from old Rosenblatt Stadium? About how many different dynamics changed when they went to the really big ballpark downtown. And it's a big park for college baseball, but it's a great site and a great atmosphere, but it's hard to score runs out there. And some of these college teams are built to score runs, as we know.
Well, both these teams are kind of constructed the same way, which is going to be intriguing. Stanford led the Pac-12 in home runs this year. They hit 73. You talked about NC State and their power. Both teams have multiple guys that can beat you going yard. But again, big ballpark, and you're going to see a pitcher in Stanford, all likelihood, in Brendan Beck, who's just been out of sight. First team Pac-12. But I don't think NC State's going to be in awe of any of this because, they just beat Kevin Copps, who's the best in the business, to get to this spot. So that's why I always say, when you get to Omaha, man, you can't backdoor your way into this thing. You got to beat really good teams, good pitchers, all that stuff. You probably have to do it on the road. NC State's been great on the road. Not good, great on the road. And when you go to Ruston and sweep and you go to Fayetteville and figure out a way to beat those guys twice and take them down and Kevin Copps on the hill, I think NC State's confidence meter is a 15 on a 10 scale. I think that they're just rolling there going, hey, guess what? Let's just go play. And I think Stanford, fresh off of just destroying Texas Tech in Lubbock, nobody does that. I mean, they pounded the baseball. Yeah. They killed it with bats. Their pitching was out of sight. They held them to 3 runs. I think both these teams are just playing with supreme confidence. And that's why at 2 o'clock tomorrow, knock on wood, without Mother Nature screwing things up out in Omaha.
Ah, true.
Is always a factor. I'm just telling you, I've been out there enough for late afternoon thunder boomers are coming. So just prepare yourself. But NC State Stanford is a great way to start this thing off.
Very quickly, NC State will also be trying to buck the trend of the team that eliminates the top seed advancing in Omaha. Only once since 2007 has it happened, and it was Michigan in 2019 that reached the finals. So there you go. The team that beat number one. Okay. You follow along here? Yeah. Michigan's the only one of those, and they didn't win either. So they lost to Vanderbilt in 19. So there you go. That's the other sidebar to the Wolfpack. Cavaliers, bit of a different story on Sunday, meeting one of the hottest teams probably going, and that's Tennessee. A little bit of going to be interesting to see Tennessee really, really went to work on LSU at Lindsey Nelson Stadium in the Super Regionals, did the Volunteers. Meanwhile, Virginia, of course, flair for the dramatic, lost the first one, beat DBU 4-0 in the second, and then got the grand slam from Teal and the great play on the wall in center by Newell to win the ball game and ultimately win the Supers. But in the Volunteers pack, they're meeting a team a little bit like Stanford, wants to put runs on the board. Virginia will grind you. I think Andrew Abbott, interesting pitching matchup for the Cavaliers. Virginia might have to grind and kind of change the pace of the game, if you will, against Tennessee on Sunday.
I think the ballpark fits with the way Virginia likes to play. Tennessee, on the other hand, hit 16 home runs in their 5 NCAA tournament games, all at home, friendly confines. And they pounded it. I mean, they just beat the daylights out of LSU in the Super Regional, but they're playing with a great deal of swagger. Again, that's all these teams are. You know, they're all good. So this will be a great deal of fun. But, Virginia, I would highly recommend, though, for the Hoos. You know, you lost your first game in the Regional. You figured out a way to come back and grind and win it. You lost the first game to DBU in the Super Regionals, came back, found a way. I would highly suggest not to lose the first game. And when you are in the loser's bracket in the College World Series, it is so difficult to fight up. That first game is really, really important as far as saving your arms, just taking the relief of, hey, we've won a game, now we can go relax and let's just go play. But man, when you lose that first one, then you realize, uh-oh, at 2 and barbecue is in play, and you're playing great teams. So yep. For both NC State, unseeded, Virginia, unseeded, they're the only two unseeded teams of the eight that are left. You would say they're probably going to be underdogs in both games, but I don't think either one are going to worry about it.
You know, Pac, here's the other thing, too, before we get to Meter at the bottom of the hour. The other side of the bracket, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Texas, Arizona. Arizona's the team that has the least amount of experience from Omaha, 2016. Texas was 18, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, 19. You look on the Virginia-NC State side of the bracket, Virginia 6 years ago, that's the most recent appearance of that side. Stanford 08, as you mentioned earlier. How about Tennessee? It's been since Luke Hochaver pitched in 05 that the Vols have been to Omaha.
Yeah, but you know what? Arizona won a national championship last decade. Texas has been there, 37 times. Vanderbilt's the defender. Mississippi State's been there 3 years in a row. For NC State, again, great storyline. Virginia, you mentioned, they won it all in 15. You know, I think at this point in time, yeah. You get out there, and by the time you see a packed house and you've been treated like kings already since you got off the airplane in Omaha.
Yeah.
I think these guys are just ready to go play, man. This is a long year. It's been a goofy year given COVID, the pandemic. You go through this whole thing. Yep. And again, I think the tournament's the best one the NCAA runs. They're just ready to go play. And like I said, if you've ever been out there, you know what we're talking about. These guys will be walking on air, man. It's just such a great, cool event. So we wish the Hoos and the Wolfpack the very best, and hopefully they give us reason to talk long into next week about more baseball.
There you go. All right, sit tight when we come back. Two-a-days with Packer and Durham continue here on ACC Network this Friday morning. We will go to Chestnut Hill, check in on Jeff Hafley in year two. Man, normal. He was so good and abnormal, I got to believe the Eagles feel a ton of confidence heading into 2021. John Mita Parrell, the voice of the Eagles, is with us next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, ACC Network, part of our two-a-days continue. We'll give you the Pitt Panthers later in the program, but right now we go to Parts Unknown. That's all I can tell you. Parts Unknown. Our man John Mita Parrell joins us to break down the BC Eagles. Where are you, John? Seriously, where are you?
I am in a leafy suburb of Boston. I'm not going to tell you my exact whereabouts because, you know, 27 years after OJ, I'm just I might be in a Ford Explorer. I might be in a RAV4. You make the call.
John Mita Parrell live from a white Bronco, Parts Unknown, up in the Boston vicinity. All right, so you're trying to pretend you're Mike Bray, because only Bray does interviews from his car. But nevertheless, yeah. You know, it's all about keeping things in perspective. Let's get into your BC Eagles. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to make a bold prediction right from the get-go. I think Boston College this year is going to blow that number 7 has been lurking for a long time in BC in the win total. I think they're going to blow it out of the water. I'm going to just jump on board right now with the way this schedule lays out. I'm buying Jeff Hafley. I am. I like their offense, and I know he's only going to make the defense better. We saw a little improvement last year. But, John, listen, you're up there. You're around them. You get a real sense that momentum is, not only can you feel it, but you can see it at Boston College.
Yeah, it's a great point, Pac. You definitely can see it. It's amazing exponentially what they've done with this program. In a renaissance period, I think, not only from returning this year, but also, as you guys well know, as I've heard you say it many times on the show, the recruiting aspect of it, what they've done there, becoming a top 40 recruiting program now, even into the top 30. So that is unbelievable what Hafley has done, turning that around. But this year, no doubt, I think that elusive 8-win plateau that they haven't had since 2009, well within their sights. Offensively, they are loaded. I think a top 3 team in the ACC. Defensively, again, what they did last year, allowing 62 fewer yards, that was big. They got to do better against mobile quarterbacks, well documented there. They've had problems with that the last couple of years, even before Hapley. But I think that will improve. I think their transfers bringing in Jaden Lars would be bringing in Isaiah Graham Mobley. Deion Jones is a great transfer from Maryland. He's a safety. They're improving that aspect of their game. They got some young guys coming into the program that I think will make an impact this year. So all around the field, guys, I think there's a lot of good things to hang your hat on.
All right, Meter, here's the deal. I said this earlier in the week. We had a question on fill in the blank, and it was about Ja'Cory Roberson of Wake Forest, you know, who was third in the league in receiving yards last year. And the question was, where would he finish this year? And I said, well, he's going to finish maybe second because Zay Flowers is going to lead the league in receiving. Now, I just went ahead and said it. I just think the Djurkovic to Flowers thing is, like Pac said, ready to explode. I think there's so much about what you showed in the spring that if Djurkovic and Flowers are anywhere near that in the fall, they're going to be lethal for whoever you're playing.
No doubt. No doubt. Great bet on your part. Load up, Wes. Load up on that. I think Zay Flowers is going to have a huge bet the – bet the 401k or whatever the heck that you're calling at the ACC network. I think he's going to have 1,200 yards. How's that for a number? Throw 1,200 out there. Throw 12 wow. touchdowns out there. Throw 75 receptions out there. Think about what he did last year. When he, you know, people say he came out of nowhere. If you're paying attention to the Eagles the last couple of years, this guy's, you know, made incremental improvements where now he's clearly an all ACC receiver. But, you know, 40 yards or more, he was number one in the conference. A fifth overall in the nation. He's electrifying. He's got NFL written all over him. I love what Robinson could do at Wake Forest. There's a lot of good receivers in the conference. There's no question about that. But I think Zay Flowers is at the top of the list.
John, I'm going to go to the defensive side because I think we all are in agreement that offensively this should be a really talented and fun team to watch. Even though running the football, they've gotten away from that, but I'm going to go to the defensive side. Linebackers. Last year, if it moved, BC had a combination of linebackers that would hit you in the next week. Jeff Hafley's a defensive-minded guy. There was improvement last year overall on the defensive side. Where are they big picture as far as still heading and trajectorying that, you know, that direction? But what are they going to do at linebacker? Because you lose some guys with experience that just knew how to play the college football game.
They did. Another valid point, Pac. 206 tackles combined between McDuffie and Richardson, two linchpin guys. I think what I said before when bringing in Isaiah Graham Mobley, haven't seen him a lot based on the COVID practices, but based on his profile at Temple, they expect him to make an impact. They also have Cam Arnold, who they're converting from safety, a rangy guy who's very athletic, I think is going to be good this year. I think they have two guys in reserve in Vinny DePalma and Paul Theobald that have played well. There's guys there that they're going to have to learn on the job. I think that's probably going to be a point where a lot of so-called experts are going to say, what are they going to do at linebacker? And it's, you know, that's an extremely valid concern. But I think as the season goes along, let's also consider, guys, you basically have three pillow games to start the year. So those help. And I think once you get those three games under your hat until – Missouri comes in on September 25th. Temple's not a pillow game, but you get Colgate and UMass. Those are two. Temple's pretty good. I'll give you two pillow to start. Those two games are going to be important for the linebackers to get themselves acclimated, to get themselves a little bit more seasoned. And I think once you play at Temple, then Missouri's, well, I think that's going to be a terrific game. Circle that one. I think Missouri's coming too in the SEC. And then the gauntlet starts. So those two games, you're going to be okay. And then you get going in linebacker.
Meter, do they have to run the ball offensively, though? I mean, we talk about, you know, Ja'Cory and Flowers and, you know, these other guys that are going to be part of the throw game. But do they have to run it? And I'm not saying run it like A.J. Dillon, okay? I'm saying do they just have to run it to create the balance, to create kind of that second line, if you will?
I think you'd like to see more of that. And I think, Wes, you got to take advantage of your offensive line. You got four pros up there.
Yeah.
You got four guys that will be playing on Sunday in 2022. First, 1A, 1B, you want to talk about Lindenbaum in Iowa. Lindstrom's right behind him at center. Remington Award candidate. Zion Johnson could be a first-round pick. I know you guys have documented this throughout your show. But you're right, there's going to be a little bit better balance. Last year was skewed. But the way I look at it is, if you have a pro quarterback in Dracovic and you have receivers like Zay Flowers and Kobe White who's coming back and C.J. Lewis and a plethora of guys that can go deep, yes, is it necessary at times? Of course you want a running game. But you know what? You got to ride that pro quarterback too. So I think here's a name to remember. Alex Sinkfield from West Virginia, transfer. He's a running back. He's coming in this year. Another under-the-radar acquisition by Jeff Hapley and his staff.
John, I get a sense that one of the things that Jeff Hapley's been able to incorporate in a really short period of time, and it's going to be really emphasized this year, especially on the defensive side, is speed, right? I mean, Boston College for years and years and years, let's be honest, plotting, pound it, you know, milk the clock. There really wasn't a whole lot of excitement. It was kind of a vanilla.
Much like the radio broadcast, Pat.
Yeah.
Much like the radio broadcast. Plotting. No, just kind of moving along.
I know better. You're talking about my man, Mita Perel, now. I know better than that. But I mean,
I know.
But BC's.
Thank you, Pat.
I got your back. We go way back. But BC always kind of had, you kind of knew what you were going to get with BC, right? I mean, size, but not necessarily fleet of foot. I get a sense that Halfley's changing that, or at least going to have to try to do that on the defensive side, because up front, you know what? You may see more speed than you have in the past at Boston College, especially on the defensive side.
Yeah, he's definitely changing that pack, and he knew it. And Steve Eisner talked about it a lot, too, when he was here. There's no question they had to become more ACC elite in that category, but they have. Man, have they done it. They have... I tell you guys, in the last 4 years, extremely noticeable as you're looking at a transfer last year they brought in, sacking Sam Howell. He's graduated. Kid Max Roberts from Buffalo. But this team is so much faster. They're so much more skilled, especially Pack, which we haven't talked about yet, but the secondary. Josh DeBerry, pro corner. He's coming. Brandon Sebastian, pro corner. Jason Maitre, another probably pro-type corner. Those guys are again, elite players. And from a speed perspective, no question, much better. Takeaways, huge emphasis of Hapley and his staff. Tim Lukabu, the defensive coordinator, always preaches that. Punch the ball out, 12 fumble recoveries, as you see most in the ACC. That's an area where, you're right, a lot of people are not talking enough about it, but it's gotten so much better.
All right, John, you've seen this move from – O'Brien to Jags to Spaz to Steve Adazio and now to Jeff Hapley. What's the concern? What's the biggest concern you've got right now in June about this fall with this football team?
I think we hit on it, Wes. I think it's a little bit on the defensive side in terms of depth. Also pressuring the quarterback. That got better last year, but it came in bunches. I think they had 17 of their 25 sacks in 4 games. So you guys, experts in this, you have to generate a pass rush consistently in this league. And, oh, by the way, contain mobile quarterbacks. Hendon Hooker, he's out of the conference. They had trouble with him last year. Sam Howell, I wouldn't call him ultra mobile, but he can do it. They had trouble with him last year. That's the problem. I don't even want to say a problem spot. I think it's a spot where you're looking and say, man, if they could get a little bit better defensively, depth concerns, linebacker concerns, then you're really talking about, as Pack said, game season for this team. And you know, I think it gets underestimated. I've already, like you guys, I read all the preseason manuals. I still do that. I'm a throwback guy. You know, I saw them ranked 54th in the country by one magazine. Are you kidding me? This team is not the 54th best team in the country. This team is going to be, I believe, at the end of the year, a top 25 team.
I think you're right. I'm buying it, too. I really am. I think that Jeff Hapley's just got that thing going on in the right direction. All right, listen, we've kept you long enough. The guy that you're valeting his car, he's totally PO'd because he thought you were going to have that car back in 5 minutes. So we appreciate you squeezing in an interview while you're valeting cars up there at the Boston Country Club. And we look forward to seeing you next month in Charlotte. All right.
Yeah, guys, I look forward to that. I'm gonna, you know, I'm playing Matt Dillon in the remake of the Flamingo Kid back. So you know, I'm having one of those summers.
Hey, let me just tell you this. I don't know what you're looking for. Big Sit's not here anymore. Okay, Big Sit's not here. So be careful.
No, not anymore.
Flamingo Kid. Flamingo Kid line. Big Sid. That. Remember when he's telling Richard Crenna? Yeah, Big Sid's not here anymore.
Yes, Big Sid's not here. Good line, Wes. I'm just looking for Janet
Thank you very
Jones.
Much.
I don't care about Richard
Crenna. Oh, nice call. Yeah, well, there you go. I think she's at Torrey Pines this weekend. All right, take care, Meter. Good to see you.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. Thanks,
you
guys.
You too.
How good is that? How good is that, Valley Cars? Oh, my God. He is awesome. John Meter Perrell, the voice of BC football. Great to have him with us as part of Two-A-Days. When we come back, our visit with Dan Radakovich from yesterday. We did talk about the addition of lacrosse and gymnastics. We also dove into the expansion of the college football playoff. Dan was an original member of that committee. His thoughts on that when we come back, in case you missed it.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. I'll emphasize again, happy Father's Day weekend. It's our weekend. Our weekend, Wes. Can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
By the way, in case you missed it yesterday, Dan Radakovich joined us, and they got big news down there in Tigertown yesterday with the addition of two new women's sports programs. That is going to be fun. It's you can imagine a few resumes come zipping down Dan Radakovich's desk yesterday, don't you think?
Yeah, email's kind of hot yesterday, I'm going to guess, about 10:30. Lacrosse in 2023, gymnastics 24, right? Is that the way I think we got it scheduled up? Winter of 23, 24 type deal? Yeah. We also, since Dan was an original member of the College Football Playoff Committee, seemed like an appropriate time to dive into his thoughts about the announcement of the proposed 12-team format that's being discussed in Chicago. Here's our visit.
Well, that's more opportunities for student athletes to participate. I think that we have to be really careful as we look at the student athlete and the time and effort that they're putting into the sport. But certainly, if part of the process was to get more teams to participate in the college football playoff and broaden its reach, that was accomplished. I thought that the idea that this was done over 2 years with those four individuals, that was fantastic, that no one really got a whiff of it until the time when they thought the cake was fully baked. And now it'll be the next part of the process, which is the valuation, which is the logistics. All of those things are incredibly important as we come to a conclusion, which hopefully will happen this fall.
All right, I want to follow up on that. You sat in that room and, found the way to get the first four done. Then you sat there a couple more years as that process continued to evolve. Just can you shed a little light on what going to 12 might be like in that room? I mean, I know it plays out mathematically at the end, but the evaluation process to me would become even elongated, if you will.
Wes, I'll tell you that just very simply, they're going from choosing four to six because six will be conference champions. So I think it's just a little bit further because right now conference championships are important, but they're not automatic. So now that we have six automatic berths put into the 12, the College Football Playoff Committee certainly has to continue to rank them. That's important. But really, their selection is the other six at-large bids. So will it be a little bit different dynamic? It could be. But I don't think it's that big of a lift for them to be able to move from a committee perspective from four to 12.
Dan, let me get you back to Clemson. Season ticket holders, Death Valley, rocking and rolling again. There's been a lot of announcements across the country getting back to full stadiums. Big picture with the Tigers and a fan base with, I think, the best home field advantage that you can imagine. Where are you heading into the fall?
We're in a great spot, Pac. We are at 96% renewal. We can only sell 59,000 tickets. We're at about 56.5, maybe a little closer to 57,000. So we're in an incredible spot right now. We're looking for full capacity. We're looking for tailgating. We're looking for all the things that make a Saturday in Clemson, South Carolina, a special football Saturday. We're looking forward to doing that again. And it's a testament to our fans. I mean, we had so many people who stayed with us from a donation perspective, mm-hmm. or, you know, last year we were only allowed to have 23-24%. So the 18,000 that were able to be in the stadium really made a big difference for us. And we again think that the fans that we have and the home field advantage will continue to exist.
By the way, just a quick follow-up with that. I've been checking the mail lately. I still didn't get those four for the Georgia game yet. So I assume we got that covered, right?
Did we get that gold platinum American Express card number yet?
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
That would be no.
See, that's it. Hey, let me tell you something, Pac. I worked for him for enough years that I can safely say that if you want four, they may be available in exchange for about 13 digits.
Oh, yes. Seriously. On a serious note, Dan, since you've been at Clemson and you have been involved in some monstrous games, and playoff games are different. I get it. Playoff games are different. But sure. Where would you put Clemson, Georgia, in Charlotte, given both teams think they're going to the national championship, and they could. Like I said earlier, this could be the first of two between these two this year. Where would you stack this one up in terms of interest level? How many times you get that kidding around, hey, I got four, you know, that routine. Where would you put this game since you've been at Clemson in the big picture?
Well, it's June 17th, and we're talking about something that far ahead. I don't believe that's happened before for us. And we started the year with Georgia back in 13 and 14, and those were big games as well. But this one is just mm-hmm. going to be huge. You mentioned all of it. I don't think you need the athletic director, either myself or Josh Brooks, to hype this game. It is just on a different level, and we are so honored to be a part of it, and we're looking forward to it. And it's going to be an exciting day at Bank of America Stadium up in Charlotte.
Yeah, it's great for college football.
It's unbelievable. It'll be good, but Pac, all it takes is that credit card. You can be there.
Platinum AX.
You know what? That's actually a start, because I thought you were just going to say, Pac, it's cash and a cash-only business. I thought that's what for sure that I was going to get from you on that.
I trust you, Mark. I trust you.
There you go. Of course. The fact that Dan Radakovich trusts me, that's a start. That's a start to trying to get my foot in the door for Clemson, Georgia, first weekend. Boys, that could be something.
I told you yesterday. He and I worked together long enough to know that I knew the minute when you said, is there any way I can get four? I knew the next phrase was going to be, well, we'll take your credit card number.
I tell you what, I had a guy call the radio show yesterday that's trying to get a couple tickets, and he had a friend of a friend of a friend that said, I could get you two in the upper deck corner, and they were going for like 500 some odd bucks. I'm like, dude, you might want to jump all over those, because I have a funny feeling as we get closer to that game, given the hype and the fact that people start now getting back into the, hey, guess what? They're all going to be sold out. Let's roll. That game is going to be insane in Uptown Charlotte. I mean, just the tailgating. If they had 175,000 seats at Bank of America Stadium, it'd be sold out. Convinced of it.
September 4th for all the Duke's mayonnaise. Clemson and Georgia.
Glad they're playing. It's great. I said it yesterday. I'll
for
say
all
it again.
The tomato sandwiches on white bread we can make.
But that game is great for college football. I love the fact that those two schools in particular are playing. They're 65 miles apart, two different states, incredible fan bases. They love their football. Mm-hmm. It's an easy trip. They see each other at the water cooler. Those kind of games are awesome. Same thing when you get like a Virginia Tech and West Virginia going to play this year. There are certain games that we kind of lost when you start about non-conference showdowns. But Clemson, Georgia, man, where do you sign up for that game? That will be tremendous. Can't wait.
There you go. Hour one in the books on a Friday. When we come back, Packer has come up. You talk about a little creativity here now. Wait till you see this little list here. Mark's been looking at some numbers and looking at some championships. Dominant teams by sport in ACC. when we come back. Hour two of Friday's Packer and Durham on the way next on the Atlantic Coast Conference Television Network.
Packer and Durham.